You are in tune with listener-supported radio KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, and online at www.kpfa.org. This is Transitions on Traditions with the Block Report Radio.
You are listening to another edition of PLCC Block Report Radio with the Minister of Information, JR. Today I'm going to be talking to two journalists who were involved heavily since day one in the Justice for Oscar Grant movement. First, we have George Chicarillo, a journalist with Counterpunch, and also David of Indie Bay Media. Let's start it off with George. First off, I wanted to talk to you two as journalists for a myriad of different reasons. I wanted to analyze how the media was covering the case of Oscar Grant. But also, I wanted to talk about some of the propaganda that's also being put out in the media in reference to, let's say, outside agitators. So starting off with you, George, can you give us a synopsis? I've had you on the show a number of times. Can you give us a synopsis of how you feel the corporate media as well as the progressive media has done in covering the Justice for Oscar Grant movement, and what has its impact been?
I would say that the corporate media has played a key role as an intermediary between the defense, the Messerly defense team headed by Michael Raines, and the sort of underlying racist structures of our society as a whole. So, for example, Michael Raines would leak some information to the media, say about Oscar Grant, about his background, about his family or whatever, and that will be picked up in the mainstream. The media will take it up uncritically, and then that taps directly into the racist sentiments that a lot of people in this country are already feeling. And so people won't even necessarily realize it, but they will already realize that they will have a position on the trial already. They'll have sympathy for Messerly, and they'll be skeptical of the claims of Oscar Grant's family simply because the media is playing this role and that they haven't come to terms with their own racism, which is being effectively amplified in this trial.
David, can you tell us a little bit about how you think alternative press or quote-unquote progressive press has been covering this?
I think that the progressive or alternative radical media has been doing a pretty good job, you know, a scrappy job is as good as it can, but that message is not amplified as loudly as the drumbeat of the corporate media. From what I understand, the media in L.A. has kind of been falling down on this somewhat. They might just be overwhelmed because of the large number of people that are killed by police. I mean, almost every week I see an email about someone new who's been killed by someone in the Los Angeles area. So I think that they've somewhat done a disservice to this, because this isn't just another killing. It is in some ways, but in other ways, it is the first trial of a police officer for a line of duty shooting for murder. And in that sense, it's historic and definitely should have been picked up more.
Let me ask you guys this. Something that has been going on in the media since Oakland has been dealing with Operation Verdict. They've been talking about these outside agitators, quote unquote. And I know that you guys were in the streets during the Oakland rebellions, just like I was in the streets during the Oakland rebellions. And many of these people who are making these assumptions and putting it out there that these outside agitators or white anarchists, you know, what is the reasoning behind this? We'll start with you, George, but can you tell us what is the strategy behind these nonprofits like the Urban Peace Movement, Youth Uprising, Desley Brooks, and all of these different hijackers of the Justice for Oscar Grant movement? Why are they putting this out there?
Well, I would say we can start by tracking historically the way this claim emerges of the outside agitators. If we take it way back, you know, this goes back to the civil rights movement of Southern racists saying these people shouldn't be in our community stirring up trouble because they're agitating the people and they're causing trouble where allegedly peace prevailed before under a sort of racist system. More recently, though, if we look very carefully at the night of January 7th and the day of January 8th of 2009, what we see is that the police emerge with this soundbite about the outside agitators. This is immediately picked up by some people who were involved in organizing people to come out to those demonstrations, but who subsequently went home and watched the press and got their information from the press. And they weren't, so this is to say, people involved in CAPE, people involved in nonprofits who weren't in the streets whether they meant to or not, essentially picked up this soundbite, which was invented by the police, fed to the media, and then fed back into these more sort of maybe more reformist elements in the nonprofits. And so they were essentially speaking about something that they didn't know anything about because they were not there and they didn't see what happened. And then this soundbite obviously kept resurfacing and resurfacing, and it's usually accompanied by this sort of condescending attitude toward the youth that these nonprofits claim to represent, because they essentially say, it essentially implies our youth, young people of color, are too stupid to make up their own minds. They are too stupid to make any kind of conscious decision, and so they need to be told what to do. And if it's not us, the nonprofits, telling them what to do, then it's going to be these so-called white anarchists telling them what to do.
Do you have anything you want to add to that, David?
Just I've, you know, heard a number of people talking about outside agitators actually being Oakland police, because they consume over 60% of Oakland's budget, and they take that money to the suburbs around Oakland because 90% of them don't even live in the city.
90% of the Oakland Police Department does not live in Oakland. Is that what you just said?
Correct. That's my understanding.
Who are people like Nicole Lee in the Urban Peace Movement? Who is Youth Uprising talking about? I'm asking you specifically, David, because you said that the police are the actual outside agitators. But who are they talking about?
It doesn't always go said, but supposedly they're talking about white anarchists. But if you had been in the streets on January 7th or January 14th, you would have known that it was a multiracial group, and the police did not actually, or nothing actually, some people jumped on a police car spontaneously when the police walked away and abandoned the car, but other than that, people were just gathered in the street, speaking out with bullhorns and so forth, and the real trouble didn't start until the police formed a line and started pushing into the crowd and beating on people with batons. Then people were forced to run away, and the speak out at 14th and Broadway was over. Yeah, I think it's easier for these groups to say that they believe that it's outside agitators than to look inward and understand that there is a lot of righteous anger in Oakland.
I think that it also is aided by the fact that they were not in the streets, and they have to justify why they were not in the streets, protecting their community. They say that they work on behalf of the community, but people like CAPE and the Urban Peace Movement and also Youth Uprising are seeming to be more of the pseudo activist wings of the Ron Dellums regime in Oakland. Do you guys follow that same logic, or do you guys have a different take on what role they're actually playing, not what the role they profess to play, but what role they're actually playing with their actions?
I think we look historically, nonprofits do play a role of protecting the state. And if we look at the more specific history of, for example, CAPE, or for example, a lot of the nonprofits in the Bay Area, and then with the election of someone like Ron Dellums, this gets even more complicated, because a lot of people are connected to Ron Dellums, or now find themselves in a sympathetic position toward the city of Oakland. And they seem to somehow forget that Ron Dellums is the one that's allegedly in charge of the Oakland police, that he's the one who claimed on the night of January 7th that he was going to withdraw the police, and then that didn't happen. He claimed that he was going to get people released from prison, and that didn't happen. So he actually is, or should be, in charge of this city to some degree, and yet somehow these non-profiteers think that they can, you know, be sympathetic toward him and see him as an ally, as Nicole Lee referred to him as an ally, and yet not realize that he's actually, you know, the one in charge of the coercive apparatus of this city.
This is a question that I have that actually is a spinoff of what you just said. Now, if we were talking about Nazi Germany, do you guys think that somebody could be a friend of the Nazis as well as a friend of the Jews? Because that seems like what actually is going on here. These people are trying to protect windows and stuff from being burnt up, but in these same conversations, they are not talking about the life that was lost, the life of Oscar Grant, as well as the young men who were tortured psychologically after their friend was murdered before their eyes. You know, Oscar Grant's friends who went to jail were handcuffed and taunted by police like Tony Peroni. Well, let's switch gears a little bit, actually, after me stating that. Why do you think that people like City Councilwoman Desley Brooks is finally appearing on the scene? I know she was on the scene, not doing much, because she didn't do anything to raise the bar, in my opinion, in the beginning days of this movement. She didn't do anything to raise the bar at the beginning of this year, at the one-year anniversary of the murder of Oscar Grant. And as of right now, I hear that she's trying to throw a demonstration at the same time that you guys are throwing a demonstration downtown. Now, What do you think she is up to? Because my question, the question that was in my mind, was if Desley Brooks was so sincere, just like Gene Quine, if Gene Quine, another city councilwoman, was so sincere about the safety of people in the community, particularly those that are murdered by police, why is it that they're not asking for the indictment of Domenici and Peroni?
It's a little hard for me to speculate exactly what's in their minds, but as far as the actions go, when I see talking points come out about broken windows and so forth, you'd have to assume that they are, you know, their interest is in protecting their own political careers, in protecting area businesses, corporations that are downtown. The message of justice has gotten lost in their talking points.
And I think you see something shared when you look at the relationship between someone like Nicole Lee, who released an email on behalf of certain nonprofits that was essentially replicated on the City of Oakland website, which used references to Huey Newton and Malcolm and Martin, and you see someone like Desley Brooks who uses and deploys a similarly radical rhetoric. I think that both sectors have a lot to deal, have a lot to gain politically from using this radical rhetoric. And to speak to observed actions, it's true, Desley Brooks shows up at certain points, but doesn't organize systematically for justice for Oscar Grant. So in January, she was at a lot of the demonstrations, but she was also seen, you know, speaking with police at the demonstrations and trying to ask demonstration organizers where the marches were headed, to try to figure out how to best, you know, shut them down. On January 1st of this year, which was to say the 1 year anniversary of Oscar Grant's death, there was a popularly organized community event planned at Fruitvale BART. She provided a stage, offered a stage, and then when people started to get too radical, told everyone to get off the stage and said it was her stage, they needed to go home. That was the literal words that she used to address the people who had planned and organized this community gathering. So now it doesn't surprise me at all that she's coming out in an effort to co-opt and to prevent things from happening, because she gains, I think, her political leverage from sounding radical, but also promising the state apparatus and promising the city that she can keep people calm.
And another thing that I think that people need to take notice of and that they need to remember is that Desley Brooks and Ron Dellums were two of the first government officials to be on the scene when Lavelle Mixon was murdered by Oakland police on March 21st, 2009, 3 months after they murdered Oscar Grant and after he allegedly killed 4 police officers. So I don't really understand how you can be so sincere against police violence, but yet you not understand the justified rage that people like Lavelle Mixon and supporters of Lavelle Mixon have had. I mean, when you watch the tape of what happened just 3 months earlier. Well, we're getting towards the end of the interview. George, starting with you, can you tell us, media-wise and organization-wise, where do you think this movement for Oscar Grant needs to go? Or I shouldn't even say for Oscar Grant. Where do you think this movement against government-sanctioned terrorism needs to go?
I think that's exactly right. And the biggest hurdle that this movement has to confront is the question of moving from a very Oscar Grant-centered movement to a more generalized movement against state terror, against racist policing and imprisonment, and toward a destruction of policing and imprisonment in its entirety. That's not an easy task. We need to simultaneously use this trial of Messerly. If it's a murder conviction, we need to recognize what kind of victory that is. And it's not a victory that the state has given us, but it's a victory that we have demanded and forced on the state. If it's a manslaughter conviction or if it's an acquittal, then I think the state needs to know that this is insufficient, that this is not, you know, this does not represent the will of the people. It does not represent the actuality of what happened in the position that Messerly took in that situation. And so we need to use this case, this individual case, as a stepping stone to a more generalized issue and to broadening this movement into fighting, you know, not just one cop, but every single cop.
Where do you think that this movement needs to go? And can you also tell us about what's planned on the day of the verdict?
Okay. I think in general, the movement needs to stay focused on goals. There's a lot of unfinished business, even just around the Oscar Grant case. Regardless of what happens with Messerly, You know, there's potential Justice Department action for civil rights violations. Tony Peroni, for one, should be charged for his crimes on the BART platform. He's the one that instigated everything. Messerly was only on the platform for about 2.5 minutes. You know, BART needs to be confronted about their police force. It either needs to be disbanded or it needs a real oversight with teeth. There are other people that are taken out by the state, unarmed people. That needs to be addressed. And I think it's important that as we move forward, we learn lessons as we go. You know, if a city official offers a stage, that city official can take the stage back and say, no, you must stick to certain talking points or you will not be allowed to speak. We have to stay on guard to not allow the movement, the genuine true movement of the people, to be co-opted by city leaders and NGOs with their own agendas. On 14th and Broadway at 6 p.m. has been called for a community gathering. And there's been a lot of behind-the-scenes work to undermine that, to delegitimize it, to try and scare people from attending, to sort of try and decentralize things and have people show up at little local areas. Even though this was called for by the Oakland General Assembly for justice for Oscar Grant before the trial even started. So they've known about it. They did basically nothing for all this time, and now they want to step in and try to delegitimize it, and they're going to put on their own event, the city-led event, where the speaker is tightly controlled. Youth cannot say what they feel at Frank Ogawa Plaza, less than a block away.
All right, well, I definitely want to thank both of you guys for coming. Is there a online email address or an online website where people can get more information?
The first one I would recommend specifically related to Oscar Grant would be indybay.org/Oscar Grant. That's indybay.org/Oscar Grant, where you can find coverage from the last 18 months of the People's Movement for Justice for Oscar Grant, as well as court documents. A number of your articles from the SF Bayview have been reposted there. It's probably the most comprehensive collection of information on the case.
Well, thank you guys both for being with me.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, JR.
You were just listening to the voices of George Ciccarillo of Counterpunch, David of Indie Bay Media, and I am the Minister of Information, JR, on Black Report Radio. We just wanted the listeners to get a true scope of what is going on in the streets and what is going on in the minds of the people who are making things happen in this historic time of change in the case of Oscar Grant. I'm the Minister of Information, JR, signing off for BlockReportRadio.com on Transitions on Traditions.